It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champions Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of UGA Sports Live. I am Jake Roos, alongside, as always, the coach, Coach Donnan, and Roddy Nabulsi joining us as well. Glad to have him, as always.
Yeah, stagehand. Very versatile. He can do it all. We've got a limited group of people helping, and these guys do a great job of setting it up. I promise you that, but got to have everything just right.
But it hurts not to have our statistician slash stage manager Dave McMahon here. He's actually working the Masters.
Big time, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. You know, this is a guy who works Final Fours, World Series, Super Bowls. You know, so there's a big event, and we've got a radio show. For some reason, he goes to those events and not our radio show. I think we need to get his priorities in place.
Somebody would choose hanging out with us over going to the Masters?
Exactly.
We got Terry Forshey here.
We do have Terry here, but he was there yesterday, yeah, so he got his fill.
Okay. Terry coming in from Cleveland.
So we do have a lot.
I'm not talking about Ohio either.
So we do have a lot of folks here at Champions. That's where we are. Champions on Baxter Street, home of the best fried chicken you will ever find. Three-time winner of the People's Choice Awards for best fried chicken. I'm sure when it comes around this year, they will. Selection comes up, they will win it again. And we, you know, they sponsor our podcast, as does 11 Alive. We're on 11 Alive's page right now. If you'll do us a quick favor, hit the like button on their page. I'd greatly appreciate it. And we're going to jump right into the show. Georgia football is going through spring practice. We've had 2 weeks. We've had a couple 3-2-1 reports. We've had a lot of observations from the limited time we get in practice. We got Coach here who can talk to us about spring practice. So if you have questions and you want to know about what's going on, go ahead and send them in. Go ahead and share this podcast, too. It'd be very nice. We'd appreciate it. Before we get started on some of the stuff that was in our 3-2-1 report and before we get into some of our observations, I want to give a quick shout-out to Athens Ford. So I got their nice hat on. Ford Truck Month is over, but we're into April. They have a ton of great deals out there. We will be mentioning those later in the show. Please swing out there if you need service. I want to talk to you real quick about service on your vehicle because their service bays are phenomenal. And, again, they've won the President's Choice for service for customer service 3 years in a row. So swing out there if you need anything done to your truck, if you need oil change, any sort of general work done. And if you've bought one of those nice trucks the last month during Ford Truck Month, go ahead and get one of those lift kits put in. They do a ton of that stuff. So any custom work you need done, swing out there. Athens Ford can do it. There's not a better group of people in the state, so swing by and check them out. I want to jump right into our 3-2-1 report. Now, we're not going to give everything away in that because that's behind our paywall at ugasports.com. But, Coach, I've been told by a bunch of different people that there is a early enrollee offensive lineman, Trey Hill. Now, I know everyone's going to be thinking about Cade Mays and
Warren Erickson.
But everyone is raving about Trey Hill.
Well, you know, the thing about Trey, a very highly recruited guy that we flipped from Auburn and – he was a little bit overweight coming in here, but we talked about it early on, I think, that he had lost some weight. But just a very powerful guy, got really good explosion, a tremendous athlete, good foot quickness to go with his power. And I think that's what's been overwhelming out there is the athleticism that he possesses, not only playing at guard, but maybe being a guy they could train for center down the road. So I think overall that you always hope that these guys are going to be ready to go fairly quickly, but with the loss of weight and with his tremendous athleticism, he's just jumped in there pretty quickly and shown that just like Mays has and, some of these guys last year, we saw Thomas jump in there. And hopefully Salyer is going to do the same thing, but really hasn't been significant to this point. The other thing, before I forget it, I just want to make sure that we do a really good job of giving a little kudos to Kirby and the staff for the coaches clinic they had last weekend. And
definitely.
The reason I say that is because the rules have changed where, high school coaches, when you used to, you'd bring the state champion from each division, let that guy speak. That was kind of a reward for him. And then we'd always have a speaker, like I had Dan Reeves after they went to the Super Bowl. But now, because of they say it's an improper inducement to have a guy here and, you know, pay him because you might be trying to recruit some of his players.
Okay, I was about to
just
say,
like, what? Giving them a job and all that. So Kirby started out last year with a really good group of pro guys here, and this year he brought in Belichick and Coach Quinn, and then the Coach McVay from out there in at the L.A. Rams, who has a tie to us with, of course, with Gurley, but
and Ramique Wilson now.
Yeah, right. But when you look at it, over 1,100 high school coaches were here this weekend, and when I first heard that, it was like, "Are you kidding me?" But realistically, that's how many were here. And I think what happens there is just the open-door policy that Kirby has really promoted to these guys, where they feel good about being around here, not only for the clinics, but to come around here and talk ball. Because, as you know, his dad was a high school coach, and we always try to make him feel welcome here. But that's a really big plus, and it really kind of shows you what kind of program we have. We had coaches all the way in here from maybe Arizona, I mean all around the country, but mostly the contiguous states. But just want to give a shout out to that. And then, you know, the other big thing that's good about it, when you have a guy like Belichick or Quinn or Coach McVay, they can talk to our staff too a little bit, you know, on the side about different things, like what do you like to do and this and like that. And I know in the one situation, Belichick was talking about the use of the forearm. You know, it used to be everybody used to do a forearm shiver, you know, to get rid of a block. Now they're using hands and different types of get off the block, but they're using it in certain situations. And, you know, I never will forget when I had a kid, the defensive lineman, old country boy, I kept telling him, I said, "Man, you got to hit him with your inside forearm. You got to hit him with your inside forearm." And he said, "Coach, which one is that? Is that the right or the left?" So I had to figure that out. But gets back to that. I've had a big opening here, but I just want to congratulate Kirby's staff for that. But I really think that Hill, significant player at this point in the program, along the lines of some other guys that have made quick moves in here, like Kevin Breedlove and Foster and Stinchcomb, those kind of guys, and then Thomas. But, you know, guys like that are just – you got such a big lower base and so powerful that, you know, can control the line of scrimmage. And it really gives us a lot of hope for our offensive line continuing to progress.
To that point, I mean, to cut you off.
Yeah, no.
I was listening to a couple guys who were catering that lunch or that coach's clinic, and they were walking in with all this food for it. And one guy was mentioning to one of his friends, just, you know, and, of course, I'm going to eavesdrop because, you know, that's what reporters do. And he turns to his friend and says, "Yeah, I was here yesterday, and there were 130 coaches listening, lined up around Coach Pittman." So to your point about, you know, some of the work that he did from year one to year two with that offensive line and having a guy like Trey Hill step up. And I've heard good things about Erickson, heard good things about Mays. But
oh, they're both good.
I mean, I have people raving about Hill.
It's just like that. Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. That's a pennies from heaven deal. How about Dave coming in from the Masters? We got him right here. Hey, all right. Paul DeMesseman here right off the Masters, too. Hey, listen, seriously, though, I just feel like that from our standpoint, just to tell these people about the clinic, what you talk about is without the high school coaches here, then our coaches get to have what they call these little bull sessions where they just get, you know, off to the side, and maybe if a high school offensive line coach will go out with one group, running backs, and but they get going there one-on-one, just like I'm right beside you, and ask Del McGee, "Hey, what do you think about, you know, should I go inside out on this, or what should I do here on my steps?" And, boy, that's invaluable to a guy to take back. And if you can just take back one drill to your high school program, it's going to help you teach better, which I've said over and over what good teachers we have here. But the access to that kind of intelligent acumen that these coaches have about how to do things. So in the one weekend, you have the ability to listen to a Super Bowl coach, a national championship game coach that's won four and got to the one here. I mean, that's really big, I mean, for these high school coaches to feel that kind of access. And like you mentioned, being able to just walk up to Coach Pittman and talk to him man-oh-man.
I would love to have – well, hey, we've got to interview Pittman before. We've got to interview Chaney, and those are two hilarious –
They're a blast.
Yeah. So –
Well, they got a year to wake up to get everything in tune when they talk to you. This once
yeah,
a year,
that's true.
They're ready.
They can really polish that.
They got
speech
all the good stuff
it.
Out there, but yeah. But they are down to earth, genuine guys that really love football. You know, I mean, yeah. The thing that I always like about being around coaches is, you know, and I'm over the hill, but I mean, go in there and talk a little ball. There's nothing like it, you know, and you can figure out pretty quick how much a guy really respects. An older coach or something like that. I mean, I feel very comfortable talking to these guys because they know that I've been down the road. But that's what I always felt about an older guy. When he was going to tell me something about what he thought, you know, even though I didn't have a lot of time, I'd always listen to him because there might be something that that guy did, you know, that helped you. And whatever it might be, you always need to listen and respect your elders. You remember that now. I'm a lot older than you.
Yes, sir.
Respect that.
The thing that impressed me, I think, about the coaches' clinic, and I do want to talk about Trey Hill, is I think that they did a really nice job meshing, you know, proven winners like Belichick with, I think McVay is one of the freshest and most cutting edge guys in the league right now. He's doing things with that offense that we haven't seen before, and I think that that brings just another element to it. So you're getting a great blend of the traditional and the new school, and I think that that was a very smart move for
right,
them to
make.
Right,
and the other thing I would add to that for the fans listening here, both Belichick and McVay are sons of coaches. Coach Belichick's dad was a scout and a coach for the Naval Academy for a long time, and Coach McVay's dad was an NFL coach, a administrator. So he grew up around the game. He actually played over there in Atlanta.
Yeah,
you know, was a quarterback over there. So it's really interesting to see how these guys develop. And who cares how old the guy is? 30, 31 years old as head coach in the NFL. You know. Really impressive. And, you know, one of the first things he did was you know, get some older guys to come in there with him. And I think it's impressive the way they did the job last year.
So we do. We have some young guys here. We brought in an older guy to kind of teach us what to do. So remember that. The young guys know what they're doing sometimes.
Right. Right.
Okay, so on Trey Hill, though, I did want to talk about Trey Hill. To me, this is not – horribly surprising. Because
it is somewhat surprising.
It's a little bit. But the thing about it is, the thing about Trey and why I think that he was ready to make this move, and it's something that I've harped to you about, I've talked to you a lot about this as well, Trey Hill has faced as many of the top defensive linemen in the country as any player, period. I've seen him take reps against every single guy pretty much that is a top player on the defensive line in the nation. So
and
he's going
to edify that. Tell him about where you saw him. You saw him at these
him at the opening. I saw him at Rivals 5-Star Challenge. I saw him at Rivals Camp Atlanta. I saw him at Adidas Camp. I saw him at Rising Seniors. I saw him everywhere.
The game, too, the high school game.
The Army All-American game. I saw him there. So I've seen him about 10 times.
Very good way to evaluate a guy because usually – you know, a guy like Wilson playing up in Brooklyn doesn't see a lot of competition there for his size. But you know, coming off of all of that stuff that this guy's got. But I think the overwhelming thing is all of us agree he's very talented. But to be able to be in a position, if you remember back in the first one we had here, the first podcast we had after spring, I said I was really surprised to see that Hill was getting in some first-team reps. Now, I don't know how much he's getting in there now, but I guarantee you Sam Pittman wouldn't be putting him in there just to make him feel good.
Yeah.
See, we heard the exact same thing from somebody, one of the coaches that went to the camp. They said, who's 55? And I told him, he goes, that guy was getting first-team reps. I'm like, really? Really? So, again, we've heard that, you know, that they're getting him ready. And that's not to say, you know, and they said before spring even started, I mean, Pittman told us, what was it, December, that he expected the battle for right tackle to come down to Cade Mays and Isaiah Wilson. So, I mean, I'm not trying to put down, say that Trey Hill's super surprising, But, again, all of our attention was kind of focused on the five-star coming in. Cade Mays is going to be in Athens. He's getting here early. This is a guy who's a Tennessee legacy. So all of our attention was there. Same thing
well
with Torrey Johnson and Justin Schaefer.
He's all doing well, though. I mean, he's really – Cade Mays is doing well. I mean, he's in the same position Hill is. He may be not getting – but the reason you put a guy in with the first team, and I always felt like this, who you're playing with has a lot to do with your how successful you are. You got a guy that's in there at center making the calls, helping you out, or the guy, whoever it might be. So you have a tendency to play a little better, even though you are capable as a second team guy. But you get around, surround yourself with better players, you kind of mesh in there. So I think you're always looking for that. How does this guy react to that kind of situation? How does he look when he's in there with the best players, and can he meet the challenge of that? You know, I mean, some guys, when they get in there and the band's playing, they don't do quite as good. You know what I mean? They get a little tight.
I'm gonna put my education degree to use for once ever.
Oh, here. My goodness.
Brace yourselves.
The term that you're referring to that we used in education was called scaffolding, and essentially the idea being you take lower performing students or students you believe can perform to a higher level, separate them out, and bring them in with higher performers, and that elevates their performance as well. It forces them to climb the ladder as well. So
that's good.
Yeah, I think it's.
But
I
there's
think
also some guys at the top of that scaffold that you'd like to put in there to start out.
Yeah,
there,
absolutely. So.
I mean,
there's
you know,
no doubt.
And there's some big old boys in the third grade that you say, hey, you can go ahead and play in the fourth grade league. And I tell you, that's very impressive. And, you know, we got halfway through after today spring practice because the 14th practice is really just an organizational type deal, you know, right before the spring game. But the really competitive out there and really – a situation where you've got a lot of guys, which I like, they throw everything at them. You know, they teach them a lot of different things here in the spring that, you know, some teams just really just analyze you and really don't see how you do in different with different formations and all. They just want to see your ability. But Kirby really gets after with a lot of different things. And, you know, our little philosophy today that we talked about last week about the different ways to call trips and all that, today we're going to talk about there's different ways to play cover two and cover one. So, you know, there's really basically three coverages, man coverage, zone coverage, and man free. And cover one is some type of man coverage. It could be man free. It could be anything, but we play an inordinate amount of man coverage with different kinds of looks so our safeties can support different ways, so our what they call the star can do things, and so our free safety can kind of come down and all that. So if you say cover one to Georgia, that's one thing, but then you got several different ways to run it. You know, I mean, you can have one rat, we call it a rat, that's the way they call it, but you can have a lot of different things where you can look like that, but give them different ways for your support patterns or different guys coming off the edge and all that. And then cover two, everybody knows that's two deep safeties and corners are up and everything, but you can play two man, you can play two cut, you can play Tampa two. There's always different ways to look at playing two deep, and I guarantee Kirby, along with Coach Saban, who he's with, they really have some great variations. And what they're able to do in today's football mode is adjust to these quick huddle teams where it used to be you just have one check. You know, you got to get lined up and all. And if you're not in anything but base, they're going to really attack you. But we got the ability with our different coverages to get lined up and play these different formations a lot better. And that's been the evolution over the last couple of years. And Kirby has been really in the front runner of that. So the bottom line is we're presenting those different kind of looks to our offense all spring, and our offense, conversely, is giving our defense those different looks and formations. So we're getting ready for next year as much as we are analyzing our team.
What did you run the most?
What, the 40 in or what?
No, when you in your secondary coverages. What did you like?
I think – we didn't see the myriad of formations we do now, but, you know, we played some type of two deep coverage, and we were a 3-4 team, you know, a nose guard up front, an odd front. I think in today's you got to stop the run, and there's a lot of different things you can run off of that, but I like the 3-4 look.
And the reason I ask is, you know,
I mean, we ran it good sometimes, but sometimes we were Jed Clampett. You know, really bad. That game against Auburn in the first half, we should have called it off there after that. But we were playing man coverage in that half, and they just threw it to one corner. It was terrible.
Back when I was covering the team then, I mean, I was here when you were introduced, and I remember doing the introductory photo and all that stuff. But back then, just being a photographer, I wasn't really paying attention. I was looking at everybody from the waist up. And that's when I learned a very valuable lesson. When people complain about play calling, I always ask them, what was the defense doing? And for the longest time, they could never tell you. I'm like, well, we ran the ball great in the first half, and then we just stopped in the second half. Well, did the defense change? Well, I don't know, but we needed to run it in the second half. It always drives me insane when you can't – if you can tell me – now, here's the thing. If you tell me that the defense was, you know, gave you this look and you still shouldn't run it, I will give your opinion 10 times credibility because at least you knew what the other side of the ball was doing. It's always been a pet peeve of mine when you can't name the other side. So.
Yeah, and I think that's therein lies the really good coaches. There's a lot of people that can tell you Sunday morning at 8 o'clock what you should have done.
Oh, I'm great at that.
No, I'm talking about coaches, too. There's a lot of you know, I've had coaches with me, you know, and, of course, I was calling the plays for a long time. But, you know, they'd say, well, we should have done this. And I said, well, hey, that's great, but where were you when the band was playing? I mean, we got to hear. I mean, give me an idea about it, you know. Hey, they did this. I mean, hey, anybody can look at the film and see that. That's why it's really critical to have some people that you feel good about looking at what they're doing. And we've talked about this on the podcast, and I really would reiterate this. You can't wait to halftime if somebody's cutting you up to get it straight. You better get it quick or the game's over. You know what I mean?
Look at Ole Miss.
So I think the real situation there is the eyes in the sky that are helping you. Also, the players on the field. We used to always have the first thing that when a guy would come to the sideline, the receivers would go to the other receivers, and we'd have a guy that would be responsible for the ones that weren't in. Like the X would tell the X what that guy was doing just to make sure, you know, and they would converse about it. And then before they talk to the coaches, because these guys are out there, you know.
Yeah.
And you say to them, hey, can you beat this guy? And he said, Coach, I'm having a hard time getting off the line. Well, you either got to put him in motion or you got to do something. But you need to talk about that. And I just feel like that we got some really, really good guys upstairs. I think Schumann knows Kirby's system as good as he does, and he can get to it quick, and they communicate with Tucker very well. And then you got Jay Johnson up there helping Chaney. I feel good about that because you got to be able to figure out pretty quick what they were in and what they were doing.
Speaking of feeling good, a couple of academias.
All right,
let's get you feeling quite good, I think.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. And I want to let everybody know Academia is one of our newest sponsors, and they've got a deal going on April 10th, next Tuesday. Okay, it's their first ever beer dinner. So you can swing out to Academia. They're going to have four different beer pours, you know, and a three-course meal by their chef, Chef Nate Eve. You get a pint glass.
You went through that name pretty – can you say it again?
Yeah, Nate Eve.
All right, good.
Eve.
That's good.
So swing out there, see Chef Nate, I guess, or yeah. Chef Eve, however you want to do it. I don't know. I don't deal with chefs very often.
Depends
except
on whether
Chef Boyardee.
You look like you don't deal with chefs.
Depends
very
on
often.
Whether you're in the day or night. It's Eve.
I eat in a trough. So I'm kind of. And I mean, hey, Champions for me is fine dining. But quick shout out to the Academia for their beer night. You can swing by their Facebook page. There's only 30 spots available. It's $55. I know my wife and I are going. That's her birthday, so
what
we'll
is
be out there.
It, 30 spots available?
There's only 30 spot tickets available for that beer dinner. So if you want to get in on that three-course, four-beer dinner, you know, because they have their pairings, here's our course, you know, and here's the beer that goes with it. It's next Tuesday, April 10th, $55, only 30 spots. Well, only 28 because my wife and I are going to take two of them.
There
so 28 spots for you to jump into, swing up by out there. Also, this Thursday, Trey Powell will be back there at the Brew Pub for live music starting at 7. So swing by Academia. Again, that was voted the best new restaurant in Athens last year. So
Usually don't see that kind of food at a place like that.
No, I mean, that's what I'm
going there for the beer, but the food's awesome.
The beer is phenomenal. I'm a big proponent of their Calibrator and their ESB. I know you like the IQ IPA, and
absolutely,
they always have new ones. Speaking of, we got a couple beers headed our way right here, so when they show up.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear.
We're really going to get started.
What we got here? Any
let's go question
questions.
All right, yeah, we got a few questions rolling in here.
Just in case you get any trouble there, we got our own IT guy here.
Darius.
Hey, Terry, make sure he gets up here and gets our IT stuff right here. So in case
Darius Gilchrist here with an interesting question, something we haven't touched on yet in this show, but I do think it's something that a lot of people are wondering about. He says, hey, guys, Kirby stated that he's concerned with the depth at DL, but isn't that self-caused by the lack of numbers, especially at the defensive tackle position in the 2017 class? Who's going to need to step up there?
Yeah, well, it is self-inflicted. We said the number one problem with that 2017 class was there weren't enough defensive linemen. There weren't that many the year before, you know. No, 2016 was good.
17
was bad. 17 was bad. 2018 was
not good.
Not
either.
Good. So, yeah, it is self-inflicted. But
a lot of that's in relation to the rest of the class, though. But yeah. I think it still remains to be seen how good these guys are going to be that are coming in. But there's no question the D-line situation depth-wise, we got to continue to increase there, and we got to develop and start getting the same kind of guys on the recruits that we're getting in the other positions.
Well, and I've said, too, for those of you who follow recruiting closely, the numbers at those positions nationally have been down.
Yes.
I mean, that's a big focus, too. So you're talking about more teams coming into a smaller pool even and getting splitting those guys up. So
there are just
think
not
that
as many guys. I'm talking about just walk-off-the-bus type guys that you know are going to play right now, right?
Right.
D-lineman.
And exactly.
Then every one of them that's like that, it's got – everybody after him. I mean, you know.
I've said the same thing about defensive linemen that I say offensive linemen. When we hold a camp, like our latest Rivals camp, there were 1,700 kids there. Okay. So, well, excuse me, not a camp, the combine. Combine's open to everybody. Every kid that wants to come out to the combine can. They come out, they run their 40, they run their shuttle drills. We test them height, weight, leaping ability, all this stuff we put them through. And you'll notice that. And I don't mean to sound
right
here, but there we go. Now there's academia beer. You could the number of kids you see that are 5'11", 165 pounds, they're a dime a dozen. There's hundreds of them.
Yep.
The number of players that walk up that are 6'7", 6'6", 6'5", 285, 295, 305, you can count on one hand.
Everybody, as soon as they walk in the camp, everybody stops and says, who's that guy? Write his number down.
Because it's a rarity to find a human being that height and weight who can actually play well. So if you think about it, if you're Tennessee, Alabama, Florida, you know, Georgia Tech, and there's a kid, you know, at North Forsyth High School that's 6'5", you know, as a freshman, or excuse me, as a sophomore, everybody's on him.
Yep.
Now, if he's a 6', 125-pound safety, super skinny, you're like, we don't need to talk to that guy. Although he might be really good, there are other options there. They're just very limited options when it comes to linemen. That's why, you know, everyone thinks about the recruiting battles for a, you know, a five-star quarterback or for a running back and, you know, the knockdown, drag-out fights over those guys. I'm like, you ought to see what the battles are for a talented offensive lineman.
Sure, absolutely.
Or defensive lineman.
Yeah. Think about a guy like the one that pops to my head immediately is Derrick Brown. Mm-hmm. How hard that situation was, how many people were involved in that. The next year, Aubrey Solomon. You know, and you're talking about that. I think that impacted all of this as well.
Yeah.
Georgia missed out on two of the key guys in back-to-back classes at that position. Now, that 16 class, you had David Marshall, Michael Carter, Julian Rochester, and Tyler Clark, who've all contributed to varying
mightily
degrees. Yeah. 17, a lot thinner. 17, you get, I think, just the one true DT in Devontae Wyatt, who then ends up going the JUCO route.
Right.
So
he's here now, and he's getting some good and you know, the thing about it, we talked about some of the issues with our secondary. I just feel like now, athletically, our secondary's made a quantum leap from
really?
The first year here to now. I mean, if you just look at the size, the length, the speed of these guys, the addition of Webb over there, a guy that I've been impressed with that I knew was going to have a chance, but William Poole starting to make a move out there.
Really?
He looks good knowing what he's doing. You know, I mean, he's been around here, had a chance to sift through this. He's starting to really be very in much where he's supposed to be. I think he's a real plus in our secondary. Obviously, Webb making that move was huge. And then, you know, Baker coming back has now kind of developed to be the, you know, the leader back there. And then, of course, you got Reed, who knows what he's doing. And you know, Terry's just a really good athletic
Trey Scott. I mean, Trey Bishop.
Well, Trey's going to be there. And
I'm just saying, that kid is –
he's a good athlete. I mean, we talked about him, but also Wilson, the kid from Mississippi. You just don't take for granted the guy's been around here soaking all that stuff in. He knows what to do, how to line up, and we've seen a lot of the guys back there over the years and that know what to do. Has a, you know, ability wise is one thing, but you got to know what to do. And the number one thing a defensive back's got to do, and everybody on defense has got to do, is tackle. I'm going to look at a guy, and if he can't get a guy on the ground, I don't care how good he can cover, he better learn how to tackle. And our coaches spend an inordinate amount of time not putting them on the ground, but we do every drill in the history of football tackling. And we do a great job teaching it, and it helps our receivers and running backs and tight ends going against them in a different, like an angle tackle where the guy will run toward the sideline and drop his shoulder on offense and the guy will hit him, or a guy running straight ahead and then he's got to give him a little juke in between the hashes. And, you know, just the form tackling that we do and the technique. We didn't miss many tackles last year. Of course, Roquan had a lot to do with that, but I'm saying our tackling is good. But I would say from a podcast standpoint, as a coach, one of the things I look for in all 11 of those guys on your defensive group, can they get a guy on the ground? Tackling is the number one thing, and I would think you'd hear that from Kirby too.
Speaking of, Kirby actually mentioned on Saturday talking about Mark Webb. He said the biggest thing that we've seen out of Webb is what a physical and willing tackler he is. He said, you know, you're surprised to see that. He played that wide receiver position, was a great one there, but he said the part of why this transition has worked out so well for Mark, it has been his willingness to tackle.
That's a great point, and that's one thing that I would look for in a defensive back, because if you look at most high schools, it's very hard for a guy, unless you're in a big school like the kid in Miami, Campbell, it's hard to play just defensive back. If you're a really good player around here, you're probably playing receiver too.
Yeah.
So being able to understand the nuances of coverages and getting off the line and all, that helps you as a defensive back because you've had to do the same thing. And I just think it was so selfless of Webb just jumping in there when Kirby put the hat on him to make him do it, and or ask him to do it. And then I tell you what,
he's a good kid.
The guy is smooth as a baby's ankles. And I was going to say the A word. He is smooth.
Well, you did, but yeah. The other A word.
He is smooth. Yeah. And Baker on the other side is another example of a guy being around here and getting pro coaching every day.
And
by that I mean guys that's been to the dance. I mean, Tucker's been up there. He's been a defensive coordinator. He's been in the pro ranks. He teaches a lot of technique. And now we got Tyson Summers here helping him too. You can't go on the field with him, but, you know, he's a good guy in the classroom to help these younger guys meet with them and all that. And another brilliant move by Kirby, just like bringing in Johnson last year. I think it's just great to have those guys around the program that supplement you as a head coach. You know, you can't do it all. And he's got good teachers there.
I think too you make a good point to mention, you know, these guys who have been around for a while, Jarvis Wilson, also DeAndre Baker. They came in that 15 class. Some great coaches even here before that staff, certainly. And Jeremy Pruitt, I think, one of the best defensive back minds in the nation. And he brought those guys in, handpicked
those guys. Good
recruiters.
Boy, you look at those guys that are going to draft this year. I mean.
That's right.
You got some good guys. But I would say this, too. Let's don't forget about speed. He looks good, too. Angular, as you mentioned, Bishop. all these guys, but there's a lot of depth there from the standpoint of people to choose from, but they just got to learn the coverages, you know.
I want to jump back to the question we had, though, about the defensive line and guys that need to step up. I don't think Tyler Clark can step up more than he has. That's been – he's
just got to play every down like a pro prospect. He can be a pro prospect. Yeah.
So take Tyler Clark. Absolutely. Definitely has mentality. Definitely has developed a skill set. I think Julian Rochester comes in beside him. Daquan Hawkins-Muckle is a guy who needs to step up. He showed 2 years ago, thought this guy's the future of the defensive line. Last year we didn't see him a whole lot. But that's the guy who needs to come in at that nose guard spot and help out. Yeah. Julian Rochester.
I like Jonathan Ledbetter's attitude, too, boy, the way he's
– we mentioned him last week, how much better he looks. Yeah. If you give me Ledbetter on one side, Rochester on the other, and
Clark
in the middle, that's a great three. But, again, they can't play every down. And you saw that we do complete line changes when they'll bring in three new defensive linemen or two.
We've done that, and I interrupt just because of this. We've done that because we had some guys behind them, you know.
Yeah, but that's my point.
But I'm saying this as a coach, and I used to talk to our guys about it. You know, hey, you can get in the habit of substituting, trying to keep everybody happy and all that. But, hey, it's not hard to play 45 plays now. Come on. If you can do that, even at that size, particularly the way they got all these stops in the game with, you know, different kind of TV timeouts.
And those offensive linemen ain't changing.
Well, that's it. And the defensive backs are playing the whole game. So, you know, we had games last year where Chubb played 25 snaps. But, you know, a lot of alternating. But they get hit more. But I just think that we might be a little bit overgoing the fact that, hey, we don't have quite as much depth, but there's nothing wrong with those guys playing a few more snaps. Hey, they don't have to be out there but three times.
Yeah, that's true.
You can get off the field quick.
Ideally, yeah. If it's longer
fourth
than
the fifth
that.
Time are on you.
Yeah, right.
No, I'm just
this
saying.
Is your fault.
Fourth down, they make them punt. But
yeah, that's what I'm saying. If there's a fourth down, if there's a fifth down, then it's, you know, they've gotten a first down on you. Well, then that's your fault. You know.
Yeah, and there's an old axiom in coaching that I always believe. There's got to be a difference between a first team and second team guy.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, if you got two guys alternating, you got two second team guys.
I think Mykael Carter is a guy that I think it would be great to see him step up, mostly just because I love how he's built. He reminds me physically of Trent Thompson.
He's
never played up to that standard, but has that physical build. And another guy, I think Jordan Davis is a guy that may get some action early on once he gets to campus, just because of how freakishly huge he is on the defensive line. He's
put
a guy
nose,
that they don't
give
have.
Give a simple assignment, go.
Give us a quick breakdown of those two guys we signed, how they look and what you think about them.
Okay,
so
Devontae Wyatt and Jordan Davis, your two signees this year.
And we got that other kid too.
Hold
fun, a different name, Halltimer or something. Like, what's his name?
Wait, hold.
It's not fair to look at your list, man.
Oh, Walthour.
Right,
yeah,
I knew
Walthour.
That was close. Wasn't it?
you were pretty close.
See, he doesn't come to mind for me either, because I keep thinking of Walther as an outside linebacker, because that's why when I saw him, you know, at the Rivals camp down in Orlando, that's where he was lining up.
And
he wasn't, you know, and he was so long and lanky. He was Jonathan Ledbetter before Jonathan added the weight.
Yeah,
know?
So we'll see there, but those guys have a chance, and they can kind of come along with, you know, within the defensive structure, I think. So, particularly Wyatt, because we were high on him when he signed, you know, and then he didn't get in here till the fall, but after fall camp. But, I mean, after the championship, he came in spring semester. But he's a good-looking kid, and he works hard. We'll see what happens.
And his coach out at Hutchinson Community College in Kansas had a chance to coach a guy like Toby Johnson, who had a very long, productive career here. And he said, you know, Devontae is further along than Toby was at the same point.
Really?
And he's got another year of eligibility under his belt. So that's a huge boost if that's the case.
I was there when Georgia had that satellite camp in Atlanta, and Devontae Wyatt showed up.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious. They'd already started. They'd already
is that
you know,
the one Harbaugh was there too?
No. This was just the Georgia one. Just the Georgia coaches were there, and Josh Lee was up there with a stopwatch, and they had Devontae Wyatt running 100 yards, and he goes over
or 40.
No, it's 100. And he walked over to Kirby, and Kirby's like, what the hell? I don't need him running 100 yards. I don't need him running 40. You give me a 20 time. And they made him run 20. And the kid was just ream of sweat. But they put him through the paces at that camp.
He can't beat it.
And then right after that, all of a sudden, it was like, yeah, Georgia's offered Devontae Wyatt. You know, he was a South Carolina commit at the time. And Georgia went after him after they put him through the paces. But you could see – and remember, this is a guy that used to line up at running back. So, you know,
I'll tell you one thing. You see, we saw the video on your site of Coach Belichick working those linebackers out with Matt Patricia, who used to work with him, who's now the Detroit Lions coach. But I can tell you, invaluable to have a kid come to your camp, whether you're the head coach or whatever it might be, and work them out through the drills to see live how the guy reacts to coaching, how he reacts to competition, how he reacts to system, even if it's just for 2 hours, you know. I mean, it's just really good. I used to love camps. Yeah. I mean, it was hot and all that and everything. But I used to tell our coaches, look, these kids, back then they paid a lot of money because they didn't have a one-day camp, you know. But a lot of kids couldn't play Dead in the Western movie, but they came. But we had a lot of good players come to camp. And I used to tell our coaches this, and I believe this to the day, and that's why I watch Kirby's camp. If you don't give that guy the same shot you'd want a coach that had your son coming to camp paying money to do it, then get your ass out of here and go play golf. I'll take care of the camp. You know what
I mean?
Yeah,
absolutely.
So we want them there to get their money's worth and make them feel like that they're learning something. But at the same time, you're evaluating them.
We definitely need to talk about one of our best sponsors, the Your Pie.
They're all good.
They are.
You know, I was sitting here drinking this beer, and you know,
you want a Your Pie right now.
I do want a Your Pie right now.
Tell us the one you eat.
Southern Heat.
I had that for the first time this weekend. I went out on Saturday night and got one myself. Was very pleasantly surprised. The buffalo sauce is actually spicy. You don't get that in a lot of places.
I told you. It's a hell of a pizza. I love it.
Again, this is the example of the chew here.
Yeah.
You guys just do a great job on that.
I'm just saying that is
well, tell them what I was on that your pie, that Southern Heat.
Well, they chicken, of course, so you get the chicken, then they have the red onions, a little bit of cilantro, and their sauce is it's a buffalo sauce instead of, you know, a heavy marinara, and it's the crust out there. Their crust, you know, because they toss the pizza in front of you, they lay it down, do you want white, wheat, gluten-free, and then they sauce it and you can add stuff to it. I always add a few banana peppers to mine. It is phenomenal, but swing out there. They also have salads, and they do have sandwiches. The sandwiches are great. The Nonos, N-O-N-N-O-S, Nono's Italian is a fantastic sandwich. I recommend it highly.
I like it.
And, again, there are 50-something locations. And just like with Athens Ford and Academia, Your Pie was founded by a couple of Georgia graduates. You know, so
support the folks who support the dogs.
Hey, we got some Your Pie people in here. Right now. Look at these guys in here. Hey, where's my pizza?
Where's the pizza?
You don't get to walk in here and not give me a pizza.
All right.
Killing me.
I do want to get to this question. I think this is a really interesting question, a good one for us here. John Paul Harris, switching gears a little bit. He says, is DeAndre Walker the most underrated player on the team? And I think underrated player but I think that underrated player is an interesting discussion for us to get into. A guy that maybe doesn't get as much love as maybe you feel like he should, maybe from the fans or otherwise.
Well, you get a tendency when a guy doesn't get quite as much press or to talk about him because he's at a position where he had so many players last year. You know,
sure.
That happens. But I wouldn't say he's underrated. I'm glad we got him. I like the way he plays, and he's going to be a good player for us. And you can't have too many guys like that. You know, you got to have those kind of players to be good in Kirby's system. And I would say he's a guy, if you want to say he's underrated, maybe running. But, you know, I think he'll do well for us. And I'm looking forward to seeing how Anderson comes in there. I'm looking forward to Cox continue to develop. You guys looked at him on the hoof out there, I'm sure, when you go out there.
Oh. He's hard to miss.
Does he make your mouth water?
And I'm thinking, when you look at Brenton Cox, and we noticed this.
Looks like he weighs about 190, doesn't he?
He does, but he moves like he weighs about 110. The cat can fly.
Woo.
And they seem to have a guy kind of prepping him. You know, that you have a graduate assistant out there, and, you know, in other words, my gut feeling, and we kind of mentioned this in one of the 3-2-1s, is that this is a guy that they want to have prepped and ready to go.
Well, you want him back. You make a good point there. You want him to not be able to play because if it's not because he doesn't know what to do.
Right.
And the only way he's going to know everything, if you're going to play with the first, second group, you better know all the calls and all the coverages and all that. And we've got a lot more than we had the first year, you know, because we were able to branch right. out. Those guys knew the system. But, you know, I remember we had Lawrence Taylor, you know. I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
And just because he couldn't know certain thing and all there, Coach Dooley made sure, said, hey, look, we maybe cut back a little bit, get that guy on the field. But I'm not saying that this guy's Lawrence Taylor or anything, but he definitely – hey, when you go to the spring game, and there's two things I would challenge every – not challenge, I would just say all of the 78,000 people that get a pass that day, check out number one in one color and number one in the other color. Yeah. And then thank me later for telling you to check them out.
They might actually be on the same.
You know what number those
– Yeah, well, they're both wearing one.
But one of them will be
– Oh, offense, one defense.
Right.
Yep.
So who would those be?
I'm just saying it's Justin Fields and Brittany Cox.
All right. Yeah. Just in case somebody's
– And again, I watch 55, you know,
just
interior
in case
line.
Somebody was on that Chinese thing that fell down from space. Doesn't know who those two guys are. Can you believe that? That was worrying me, man. They got a dang thing falling out of space, but fortunately it hit the dang Pacific coast. But
luckily for us.
Here's the West Coast. We're fine.
Just like the Chinese send up a thing that wouldn't work.
Michael Cagle, very interesting question here. And I think that this is especially pertinent with the discussion about Trey Hill. He says, does Salyer come in? Jamari Salyer come in and take somebody's job this fall?
Well, it's hard to say that right off the bat because you don't know how quickly he's going to be ready to jump in here. But I would say this, of all the guys that we signed last year that everybody thought had as good an opportunity on offense as anybody, that would be him just because of the way he dominated all these different drills. So you would come back and tell me the same thing that you're talking about Hill. And maybe might have been – he's a five-star and Hill's a four, but like – if he's better than Hill, everybody come on down to Champions and eat on me.
I will. The thing about it is,
I mean, seriously, man.
For Jamari, for Jamari, freakish. It's going to be, and I don't think he's going to have any problem with this whatsoever. But I think that the difference for Trey, what the big thing has been him getting in here, getting his body right, getting right. in shape. And Jamari is a little bit closer to that, but he's going to even change more once he's yeah. in this.
There's a lot they can do over those 3 months in the summer.
Absolutely.
And you saw what happened with Thomas, and he played in the same system under the same line coach. And it's just hard to project exactly how this thing will pan out because O-line is a little bit different with what you got to do. But if you're talking about a prototype, two guys that look like guards and two guys that look like tackles, then you're looking at Wilson and Mays look like tackles and Hill and Salyer look like guards. And I'm talking about on any level.
Yeah.
Give me Erickson at the middle snapping that ball, too.
Erickson's, I like Erickson. I mean, we hadn't talked a lot about him, but
he's nasty.
To me about him, he's a guy that George has always had a guy like him playing. It just means so much for him to play here. He's a Georgia guy. And, you know, Andrews, whoever it might be, you know, that's what he is. He's just a – I like Erickson. I mean, I really like him.
And a guy that he brought to mind for me watching him, he's physically put together, I think, better than this guy. But Brandon Cablano, the aggression that he brings to the field and how nasty he was,
I think Brandon was money in the bank as far as being solid center. Snap the ball, lefty snapper, and played every down very consistently.
Played hurt, played well, mean.
He was good. We just didn't have a great supporting cast all the way across that line, you know. But, hey, there's always – those are good questions. It's just hard to project a guy and say for sure, you know, that this guy's going to play right away. But and part of the deal is, hey, 2 years ago, if you'd have said, hey, can Salyer come in and play right away, I'd say yes just because who his competition was. But now comp's out there, man.
We've got a few recruiting questions I wanted to touch on real quick. Alvin Todd says, "Do you think do you guys think the staff has moved on from one of our 2019 offensive line commits?" Go to UGASports.com and check that out. Chad Simmons has a story up on that. Luke Griffin is the kid that
is that because of his knees? What do you think?
I do think it's because of his knees. Yeah, he's had two pretty severe ACL tears at this point. You know, that's just tough for an offensive lineman, especially a young guy like him, to rebound.
So you think now, we've moved on or not?
It's looking that way. Yeah, things are certainly pointing in that direction. He says he hasn't heard from Georgia all that much. You can get, like I said, the full details over at UGASports.com, but I do think that it's a little hard for me to see him in this class right now. Kamel Oz says, do you think DJ Turner, Colby Wooden, North Carolina DT3, that he lists three guys out, Devontae Dobbs and Anthony Bradford have committable offers?
Who's this guy work for?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Where's he got all this stuff? Hey, that's a great question, man.
Actually, give me his name. This guy knows more about recruiting than you do. Yeah.
Kamal, I do think that I think
I like
that,
it when you got to answer one like that.
I think that Turner does. I think Wooden is a guy who's right there on the fence. I think that they're evaluating some options around him. I will say they like him a lot. Dan Lanning has been on him pretty consistently, and I know that he loves Georgia a lot. I've got a story coming on him later this week, so make sure to stay tuned for that one.
Hey, way to tease it, man.
The North Carolina three defensive tackles, I think that given the situation at defensive tackle, I think any of the three of those guys, yeah, they could probably if they wanted to. Devontae Dobbs is a perfect fit for Sam Pittman's offensive line. I definitely think he is. And Anthony Bradford's a guy I'm not as familiar with, so I'm going to reserve comment on him.
Where's he from?
Anthony Bradford is from Muskegon, Michigan, I believe, actually.
Was that guy that just visited?
No. That was Zach Harrison. That was five-star Zach Harrison.
Now, I'm just saying there were a couple of Michigan guys that –
Oh, yes.
How about that Villanova basketball team without any five-stars, without all this guys are talking about, you know, lottery picks, all that, win two national championships in 3 years. I tell you, Jay Wright
– That's a coach.
– is a heck of a coach. But, you know, he started out his first 3 years and had a losing record.
No.
Not Villanova, but wherever he was coaching, he had a losing record. I'll tell you where it is in a minute. I'll remember. But that just goes to show you never know how you analyze. But I used to deal with him and coaches versus cancer, you know. We go out to the guys. I mean, he would sit and talk with you forever about anything. He had a hard time understanding me right off the bat, but after we got going there. But he, very genuine guy and a heck of a coach, and he really does a good job.
Hofstra.
Yeah, what was it?
Hofstra before.
Yeah, what was his record? Not good?
Not good, I don't think, no. Let's see.
I'm going to tell you what it was because the guy sent me a text about hanging on about it. It just goes to show you never know.
This is funny. We do tend to have a situation where we expect, you know, for your good coach, quote, you know.
Sure.
For those listening or at home, I'm doing the little hash.
Quote fingers.
Quote fingers around a good coach. You know, they're like, well, you got to come in and, you know, win automatically, win young. You know, everyone wants a hot
Coach
new young.
Look how long it took him to get going at Duke. They hung him in effigy.
You know, sometimes people actually get better at their job as it progresses.
Thankfully, I
know
that was true of me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, I mean, like I said, I started out as a got my journalism degree, but went into photography. I was, shot for, Red and Black, and then moved on, and eventually was shooting for Sports Illustrated. I mean, I went up that chart. Then I had to start writing stories. My stories were horrible, but
read
I got better
at it. Read out what his record was.
10-18, 9-18, and 12-15 his first thing.
That ain't good.
Yeah. That's.
But the point being,
some
people learn
stuff. He just won two national championships in the last 3 years.
You learn stuff. And not that I'm any better writer now, but everybody can get better at their job as it progresses. And sometimes it's tough to stick with a coach who has those types of records, because what happens in year four and year five if you wind up with the same records? Then the AD's like, look, you idiot, you had 3 years, it showed it didn't work, you know. But if all of a sudden he does win in year four and year five, heck, right now, I mean, we saw this just play out with Mark Fox. We thought that he was like, okay, you've recruited better, you got Yonte Maton, got these new guys coming in, your best recruiting class ever, let's see what you can do this year. It didn't work out, and a lot of people are like, well, hey, should have been gone last year, shouldn't have been here this year. But now, all of a sudden, we're seeing the baseball team. The baseball team is looking good, and I thought Strickland was going to be fired last year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, And I'm not saying now. Now granted, hey, that's a proven coach. But sometimes you got to stick it out. You don't know how it's going to play out. And I'm glad I'm not the one that has to make a decision on, do you fire this coach, start all over again with the program, or do you stick with him when he's got, you know, these recruits and this possibility? So
because of social media, because of the support patterns around the country, so much knowledge about your program, there's not as much patience there on any coach. I mean, it's just win now, baby. Get it going quick, and it's hard to do. But that just goes to show you, that guy, somebody hung in there with him, you know, and of course, he's a Raleigh Massimino clone, you know, Villanova. And Coach Byerly's bragging about Philadelphia today. You know, he's a big Philadelphia guy, but Villanova.
He talks Philadelphia all the time, but he's been here 750 years.
He's a Georgia guy all the way.
I know he is.
Hey, but with the Eagles, with the Eagles winning and everybody else, it's a big year for Jack, man, with the Villanova.
All right. Let's go ahead, and I think on that note, wrap things up.
Well,
you got one more?
No, I want to shout out a couple of our other sponsors. A big shout out to Cable East out in Statham. Robert Wall, thanks for being a big part of the show. Love you very much for that. And also, I want to tell everybody to go to 365 Game Day to get your gear. Now, granted, you can go to the Rival store and get all your Georgia SEC Championship gear, all your Georgia logos, all that fun stuff. It's at the top of our page. If you want to go to the Rival store, that's great. We get us 1%. 2%, something like that, kickback on it, which, trust me, we'd be happy to take it. But I will say this, that the Georgia guy who runs 365 Game Day, I don't want to give out his name because I don't want you bugging him, but he's another Georgia guy, huge Georgia fan, Georgia sponsor. The guy has been great to our program, been great to our site for years. So swing by 365 Game Day. They allow us to share the podcast on their site.
Good.
Good folks out there. I saw his Easter pictures. Got a little girl he's supporting out there. So swing by 365 Game Day and take care of them as well. And, of course, you know, if you need a new or used vehicle, you can swing by Athens Ford. It's the only place where you can get a vehicle with a lifetime powertrain warranty. That's their thing. If you don't learn anything else about Athens Ford, that comes to mind, think lifetime powertrain warranty. They're on Atlanta Highway, very close to academia. So if you can pick up your new Ford F-150.
Go celebrate with a cold pint.
Go celebrate down over to academia.
Responsibly.
Responsibly, yeah. And get a good meal. So
education, using the good response. Yeah. I like it.
We never fully answered that question, though, about who we thought was the most underrated player on the – and that's really tough because you don't have a good frame of reference as to who is – I mean – is it number of stories that we do? You know, is it a guy who you need to run your program that no one talks about? You know, because by that criteria, I'm gonna say Lamont Gallagher.
I understand that. I think that's a very good pick.
We hardly ever write about him.
A guy that we harped on a great deal last year, but I think made maybe even a bigger impact than people gave him credit for because they were focused on some of these, and rightfully so, focused on some of these great stars on the defense, Roquan Smith and the Trent Thompsons of the world. J.R. Reed was a guy that I thought made a significant difference in last season, and I think going forward has a chance to do the same.
I'll give you another. And going last year, it's really easy. You know, you can talk about Jeb Blazevich.
Sure.
You know, Reggie Carter. You know, Reggie stepped up and had innumerable number of times.
Hey, last year's history, man.
I'm just saying. But going forward, you know, I think a guy that Georgia fans should be very excited, decided to stick around, Lamont Gallagher. And it's tough to give guys – it's easy – here's a guy that touches the ball every play, you know, and it's easy to forget that there's a guy in there taking those on those big hogs in the middle, you know, who came in as a defensive tackle.
You usually don't have a guy that –
and Kendall Baker, too.
Yeah, you usually don't have a guy at center that can come off the ball with his hand down like that to snap it with the velocity and power he does. I mean, that's really good.
All right, so that's the answer to the question. Got anything else you want to hit?
I think we're good.
All right.
We don't have a rapid fire here, about three questions in a row with one response?
I don't think so. Not today. I think we're going to wrap it up for today and give prep to go out to spring practice.
We got to say a lot of kudos to our man coming all the way from the Masters back here today, Dave.
I heard he's going to make the cut this year.
He's going to cut one of them egg salad sandwiches in half. That's what he's going to do. Anyway, be sure to tune in next Tuesday at noon here on 11 Live Sports. Be sure to like their page, and we will talk to you folks next week.
Thank you, guys.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.